Hello. This is John Ivey from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the September-October 2010 issue of Scouting Magazine. Our first article is entitled, What Would You Do? Want to Fight? Page 24. Ideas from the field. What to do when fists start flying? On a recent campout, two scouts and Scoutmaster DS's troop got into a fight over a prank gone wrong. He wondered how other troops handle fights or prevent them from occurring in the first place. Two simple rules. I know that Weeblow scouts are a little easier to direct, but over the past 15 years of Cub Scouting, I have developed two simple rules of conduct in my den. Number one, no one is rude. This includes rude words, jokes, actions, bathroom noises, and interrupting. Number two, no one is hurt. No hurt feelings, no physical hurting. I have had almost 200 boys go through my den, and I only occasionally have to use a gentle reminder. If I have a major infraction, I leave my assistant in charge and talk to the boys away from the group. Weeblow's leader, B.A. in Manti, Utah. Just say no. Physical fighting has zero tolerance in my book. I don't care what the circumstances are. The initiating scout will be sent home. Depending on how involved the scout that was defending himself got, he may go home as well. Assistant Scoutmaster J.K. in Loveland, Colorado. Work it out. A dose of good old hard work goes a long way. Make them both scrub the fire pots or build a large campfire and or do another appropriate task together. By the time they're done, neither they nor their comrades will be picking fights soon. Typically, their parents will support this action, and the time working together can actually bond them. Cubmaster R.S. in Carlisle, Massachusetts. Talk it out. If the situation were to appear, I would likely send both boys to cool off for a short period. I would then bring them both together, have them explain what happened, and ask how they might have prevented it and what they should do about it. I want the boys to solve their own problems. And that's from Scoutmaster M.P. in Matthews, North Carolina. Put them on K.P. If the boys have too much time on their hands, they can have K.P. duty for the weekend to keep them occupied and give them something to think about the next time they feel like fighting. Beyond that, let it go. The slate is clean the minute you leave camp. Troop Committee Member J.H. in Garden City, Michigan. Lay down the law. Our troop has a written policy that physical fighting will result in the scouts being removed from the activity. If we're on a campout or at summer camp, the parents are called to come pick them up. The scouts are informed of this policy when they join, and it is repeated regularly. And that's from BM in Moldeline, Illinois. Obey the law. Ask the scouts which parts of the scout law they are demonstrating. The other scouts will chime in with which parts they are not demonstrating. Putting them on the spot in public this way is usually enough to defuse the situation. And that's from DBG in Chatsworth, California. Next question. Promoting advancement without being pushy. Our troop has many boys who have just crossed over from Weeblow Scouts. Some of their parents have their eye on the Eagle Scout Award from day one. Others give no thought to advancement. How do we help parents find a healthy balance between the two extremes so they can encourage their boys on the trail to Eagle without pushing them off the trail? That's from JT in Charlottesville, Virginia. Well, let's go to our next article. Merit Badge Clinic, page 26. A laboratory for learning. Fun and fieldwork make environmental science meaningful. Scouts pursuing the Environmental Science Merit Badge during summer camp at New York's Henderson Scout Reservation spend a lot of time at the dining hall. They go there to collect paper, cardboard, and glass for their recycling program. They go there to get aluminum roasting pans to use in experiments. They go there to set up particular collectors, Dixie cups loaded with Vaseline attached to trees near the loading dock. The alternative, says Merit Badge Counselor Don Tuttle, is a lot of time spent at the trading post. If he fails to capture scouts' attention, Tuttle said, they end up at the trading post drinking Slurpees for the rest of the week. That's not likely to happen in the veteran counselors' classes. However, Tuttle, who earned a William T. Hornaday Award as a scout, has been teaching environmental science since the badge was introduced. He also served as director of conservation training at Schiff Scout Reservation. After 37 years of teaching environmental science, the retired high school science teacher has learned how to make the badge both informative and fun. Take those aluminum roasting pans from the dining hall, for example. To demonstrate ways to reduce the effects of an oil spill, Tuttle sets up pans representing oceans A, B, C, and D, the Atlantic, the Pacific, the Caribbean, and the Indian. Once the groans subside, he knows the scouts are ready to listen and learn. I like to inject as much humor into the situation as I can, he said. I've had 65 years to polish my jokes. He's also had plenty of time to learn about the nature of boys. He divides each day's merit badge session in half, covering the classroom work first, when the boys are more alert, and the field work later on. Fieldwork is the key to environmental science, which makes it the perfect summer camp merit badge. Environmental science is best taught in the natural environment, and camp is the ideal vehicle to do that, Tuttle said. The natural environment is right outside their tent doors. Also outside their tent doors are more of those Dixie Cup particular collectors. At the end of the week, Tuttle scouts bring their cups to the Nature Lodge, tear off the sides, and look at what's left under a microscope. We get a good example of how different microenvironments produce different kinds of particulates. Silt in soil, carbon soot particles from campfires, insect parts, he said. All sorts of things are floating in the air that nobody ever thought about seeing before. Beyond the experiments, environmental science does require some book learning. Scouts must define 19 terms ranging from biosphere to watershed. Tuttle said it's easier to teach the terms by handling them in groups of related terms. For example, threatened species, endangered species, and extinction all go together. He also readily embraces technologies that don't exist when he was a scout. Recently, a class was talking about the term brownfield. One of the boys pulled out his PDA and had the definition 2 minutes before we could even look it up, he said. Tuttle thinks today's scouts are more aware than ever about environmental issues, even if they pretend otherwise. If you engage in them, they'll take to you and take to the teachings of the merit badge, he said. I'm a firm believer that any counselor can learn these things and put them into practice. Next article, Nature of Boys, Successfully Shy, page 22. Use the familiar help new scouts adapt to their environment. As Pack 44's Join Scouting Night kicks off, Cub Master Janet sends the prospective Cub Scouts outside to play games with a couple of den chiefs. They all go except for one boy, a fourth grader, who refuses to leave his mother's side. Janet tries to encourage the shy boy without success, giving up and only after embarrassing him in front of the group. How could Janet have better handled that situation? And more important, how can you work with shy kids in your pack or troop? To learn the answers, we talk with Dr. Bernardo Carducci, director of the Shyness Research Institute at Indiana University, southeast in New Albany, Indiana. Carducci, who refers to himself as successfully shy, estimates that 40% of kids are shy, making shyness about as common as brown hair. More often, shy people aren't introverts, he says. Shy kids want to be with others. They just have difficulty doing it. Alert Scout leaders can help kids overcome their shyness. Carducci offers four techniques. 1. The factorial approach. Change exacerbates shyness, and a joint scouting night is all about change, new faces, new activities. When you bring these kids in, you're changing many, many factors at the same time, Carducci says. Using a factorial approach, though, you change just one factor at a time. If they're going to work with new people, that's the factor that you're going to change, he says. So you have them do something that's old, meaning familiar. At a local joint scouting night, play games the prospective Cub Scouts already know, such as Duck Duck Goose, or when Weeblo Scouts cross over into the Boy Scouts, review the knots they learned for the outdoorsman activity badge instead of teaching them how to splice rope. The cohesive cohort. Carducci's second technique advises that you keep boys who know one another together in what he calls a cohesive cohort. Rather than breaking them up with four or five different older boys, he advises, keep them together in that one group. Then it's familiar people doing something new. Of course, the cohesive cohort already exists as a natural part of scouting. In a Cub Scout pack, second graders from the same homeroom typically form a wolf den. In a Boy Scout troop, boys who cross over from the same Weeblo Scout den typically form a new scout patrol. Some leaders view these natural groupings as cliques that they should break up. But though it's important for scouts to get to know boys beyond the den and patrol, that can happen only if they stay in scouting long enough to get acclimated. Next, the buddy system. The cohesive cohort works when boys join scouting in groups. When a single shy boy appears in the scout house door, consider Carducci's third technique. Assign him a buddy to show him around. What the buddy can do is introduce this person to other individuals, so he's the social facilitator, Carducci explains. The buddy should be well connected in the unit and someone the new scout already knows. The den chief who worked with the boys' Weeblo Scout den, or just a successfully shy older scout who knows what being the newbie feels like. Next, wait and hover. When all else fails, Carducci says, just leave the shy boys alone or with their moms at a joint scouting night. Some kids need more time to warm up in an unfamiliar environment. Carducci calls this technique wait and hover, but he emphasizes that you can't wait too long. It can work as long as there are some periodic attempts to bring them in so that they're not just standing there by themselves, he said. While scouting can exacerbate shyness, Carducci says, he also believes the program represents a great place for shy kids. The kinds of things we'll tell people to do to deal with their shyness are the things scouts do already. A big part of overcoming your shyness is letting go of this self-focus and being more focused on others. That's the core of scouting. Of course, it has pictures here of scouts in one group and then the shy one standing alone. All right, our next article, Survive This Separation Anxiety, page 64. When you've lost your way on the trail, stay calm and act quickly. Potential emergency. You're hiking in the wilderness, and 3 hours into the journey, you become hopelessly lost. Then you realize you've dropped your map somewhere along the way. What do you do? Solution. You did at least remember to drop breadcrumbs along the trail, right? In all seriousness, much of wilderness survival is about what you've done before becoming lost, not what you do after the fact. So before you laced up the hiking boots, you, of course, remembered not to hike alone, to tell someone where you're hiking, when you're leaving, and what time you'll be back, to stay on marked trails, to pack plenty of water and warm clothes, to bring a compass, to bring lots of matches in a waterproof bag or two lighters, to bring a whistle. Sound from a whistle travels farther than a human voice. To carry a map. Well, at least you were carrying one. If you followed all these tips, you'll likely be found. So stay put and wait for rescue. In other words, as the Boy Scout handbook puts it, stop. Stay calm, think, observe, and plan. But what if you've made mistakes? You followed a false trail and can't find your way back. Your canteen had a slow leak. You packed the meat thermometer instead of a compass. Well, now it's time to signal for rescue, and that means moving. First, determine your general direction of travel. Though the method's not perfect and can be difficult depending on weather conditions, use the movement of the sun across the sky to determine compass positions. Don't bother with the tired moss only grows on the north sides of trees technique. This won't work. Begin travel in the general direction you've come from. As you walk, turn over leaves and branches, or use cairns, packs of rocks, to mark your trail so that you don't double back. Don't split up from your buddy or your group, stay together. Next, move to higher ground. This will allow you to view the surrounding terrain and help you spot critical landmarks, roads, bridges, rivers, shopping malls. Further, you'll need to build a signal fire, and smoke coming from a hilltop won't dissipate as much as smoke from a valley before it's spotted. Find a small clearing and carefully build a fire. The smokier, the better. Use dry wood first to get the flames going, then slowly add damp leaves or grass to create smoke. Keep the fire going all the time. If a spotter plane or helicopter flies overhead and the fire's out, holding your lighter up like a concert goer isn't going to work. The fire also will provide light and heat as day turns to night and may provide some safety from wildflower. Just remember to build the fire so that it won't spread. If you're carrying an emergency blanket, spread it on the ground during daylight hours to signal your position. At night, use it and the fire to stay warm. Then sit tight and wait. If you only hiked a few hours, you're only a few hours from potential rescuers. Next article, Forward Momentum, pages 38 and 39. A year of celebration leads to a future filled with promise. As volunteer scouters gathered for May's National Annual Meeting in Dallas, they actively engaged both halves of the BSA's centennial slogan. There was plenty of celebrating the adventure in this 100th anniversary year, coupled with a commitment to a 5-year strategic plan that provides crucial roadmap for continuing the journey. The plan, designed for implementation from 2011 through 2015, will be the cornerstone for our second century of scouting, said Chief Scout Executive Bob Mazuka. This investment in setting our course may well be one of the most significant accomplishments in the history of our movement. With the guidance of Chairman Stephen E. Weeks, a committee of volunteers and professionals forged a document that strengthens and expands scouting influence among its members, chartered organizations, and communities at large. The plan's 7 key themes include dynamic and relevant program, innovation and technology, and youth and advocacy strategic relationships. Download the entire document at digitalscouting.org/strategicplan/strategicplan.pdf. At the meeting's Americanism breakfast, National Eagle Scout Association President Glenn Adams reported that 2009 was another record-breaking year for Boy Scouts attaining the Eagle rank, 52,470. NESA also added $1 million to its scholarship funds and introduced a $25,000 grant funded by the United Health Foundation for an Eagle Scout who pursues a healthcare career in an underserved community. More information about NESA scholarships will appear in Scouting Magazine's November-December issue. Ralph De La Vega, president of CEO of AT&T Mobility, inspired the morning audience with his moving account of immigrating to the United States from Cuba as a lone 10-year-old in 1962. De La Vega, chairman of the BSA's Hispanic Initiatives Committee, went on to describe how his grandmother later counseled him to never let someone put limitations on what you can achieve. Today, he is the head of a corporation with 87 million customers and $50 billion in annual revenue. The advice my grandmother gave me, like the advice our scoutmasters give our young people, can have an immeasurable positive impact on lives. No other institution has a bigger opportunity to forge the American soul of today's youth than the Boy Scouts of America. Multiple breakout sessions during the three-day meeting gave attendees insights and updates on topics such as Our Future Begins with Cub Scouts, details of the program's new delivery system that strives for a 25% higher retention rate, social media and the BSA, a primer on communication tools such as Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, and the summit. New 2010 Jamboree site, a multimedia presentation on the future facilities and program opportunities at the BSA's newest property in West Virginia. At the meeting's closing banquet, the BSA's new president, Rex Tillerson, paid tribute to this special moment in the organization's history. Tillerson, chairman and CEO of ExxonMobil, Eagle Scout, and Silver Buffalo recipient, told the audience that four generations of his family had touched the entire 100 years of the Boy Scouts of America. My grandfather was a member of one of the first scout troops in Texas. My father is an Eagle Scout and was a professional in the Sam Houston Area Council for 28 years. I'm an Eagle Scout, and my youngest son is an Eagle Scout. Now it's up to us to prepare the way, prepare the ground, and secure the future for the next 100 years of generations. I'm confident, beyond doubt, of our future for this organization and the role that it will continue to play in producing the greatest citizens our country has ever known. And our next article, Fitness, Best Supporting Action, page 54. Building a stronger midsection will make your whole body feel better. Doing abs exercises to get rid of your belly is an exercise in futility. Consider this. To burn off a pound of weight, researchers estimate you would have to crank out 250,000 sit-ups. That would take you roughly 7 years at 100 crunches a day. It'll take your son less time to complete his rank requirement for Eagle Scout. But there are better reasons for exercising your abs than losing a little middle jiggle. Your abdominals and lower back muscles, collectively called your core, are involved in just about every move you make. This girdle of muscles supports your spine so you can crawl out of bed in the morning and stand erect. Whether you pick up a baby or a sack of kitty litter, you call upon your core muscles. When you do a J-stroke with a canoe paddle, you rely on your abs. While standing at attention during the Scout Oath or Pledge of Allegiance, your core muscles keep your posture arrow straight. And if you complain of a bad back, chances are that weak core muscles are part of your problem. In fact, in a study at California State University, people who followed a 10-week core exercise program reported 30% less lower back pain. Back pain or not, your core is critical to being an active scouter. So work those exercises into your fitness routine twice a week to flex and strengthen this pivotal area of your body. Start with one round of 8 to 10 repetitions, taking about 30 seconds of rest between exercises. After a month, try to do the circuit without any rest between moves. In 2 months, try for a second circuit of these exercises after resting 1 minute between rounds. And then, of course, it has pictures of these exercises. It has one where the scout is lying on his back with his knees flexed. Leg lowering drill. Lie on your back on the floor with your arms out to your sides and palms up. Keeping your feet together, bend your knees to 90 degree angles and raise your legs until they are over your hips. Bracing your abdominals, press your lower back into the floor as you slowly lower your legs. Take 3 to 5 seconds to lower your feet to within an inch of the floor or until your lower back starts to arch. Allow your heels to touch and then raise your legs back to the starting position. That's one repetition. Do 8 to 10. Then Superman. Lie face down with your arms extended straight out in front of your head, palms down. Lift your arms ahead and chest while also lifting your legs. Hold that position for 2 seconds, then lower to the starting position. Do 8 to 10 repetitions. And some letters. Let's go to some letters on page 4. Coffee comments. I have been an active scouter for 65 years, and I believe the May June issue of Scouting Magazine is the best I've ever seen. It has lots of information on what is coming up in scouting, and the Fuel Up column titled Caffeinated Campout was a real eye-opener. Keep up the good work. And that's from Zach T. Russell in St. George, Utah. I am displeased with the Fuel Up economy column. I recognize many adult leaders like to drink coffee when they go camping. I was dismayed that the article only focused on the positive effects of drinking coffee and completely ignored much research that shows coffee to be a dangerous drug with side effects that outweigh any positive effects. About 20% of Scouts units in the BSA are chartered to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Mormons, which teaches its members that drinking coffee is bad for their health. That's from Rex B. Bendixson in Richland, Washington. Stamp of approval. When Scouts go geocaching, the real game boys, May June issue, please make sure that what they find is geocache and not a letterbox. A letterbox is found by following a set of clues, much like an old-fashioned treasure map. No electronics or coordinates are involved. The letterbox will contain an ink pad, a logbook in which you enter your stamp, and a rubber stamp that you use to stamp your own logbook. One important distinction is that nothing leaves the letterbox. The rubber stamps sometimes go missing from letterboxes when they are confused with geocaches. Letterboxing clues can be found at letterboxing.org and at atlastquest.com. And that's from David Browning in Concord, Massachusetts. Cool Schools. I really enjoyed your Cub Scout Corner article, Plug Into the Network, in the March-April issue. We are a homeschooling family and love the scouting program. We often include scouting projects in our school day. And that's from Dana Cockrum from Conway, Arkansas. I appreciate the visibility brought to homeschool scouts. We homeschooled our son and daughters. We certainly incorporate many of the Cub Scout achievements, belt loops, and pins into our curriculum. Our strength is our flexibility. This allows us to speed up or slow down according to the needs of each child. We also enjoy many more hands-on field trips and see a practical application of lessons every day. This gives many people the false impression that we have lots of free time. We have a full schedule and must carefully choose our commitments lest we become overextended. In addition, we choose to homeschool because of the diversity found in exposure to the world, not the homogeneous environment of a classroom made up of boys and girls of the same age and generally similar demographics. Choices and decisions to homeschool are as varied as any Cub Scout pack or Boy Scout troop. That's from Grant Graslow in California, Maryland. As a homeschooling parent and Weeblow's Den leader, I suggest that your readers might like to know that most homeschooling families look and act just like theirs. My son's circle of homeschool friends routinely discusses movies, culture, and video games. It's absurd to suggest that these concerns would keep a family from joining our Cub Scout pack. That's from Sharon Browning in Matthews, North Carolina. And finally, another bag. I find it interesting that 3 merit badge patches have been changed over the years due to erroneous designs, bugs in the system. One more is in line to be changed, orienteering. The current patch features a red and white semaphore flag rather than an orange and white orienteering control maker. And that's from Ron Reynolds in Cincinnati, Ohio. Well, That's all. We've run out of time for today's reading. I am John Ivy, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience and readily available as a podcast after this broadcast. We hope you've enjoyed today's reading. So long, till next time.